भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Now, this instruction of Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 5, Text 34. In translation of purport, by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Thus, when all a man's activities are dedicated to the service of the Lord, those very activities which cause his perpetual bondage become the destroyer of the tree of work. Sri Chaitanya Manavitsam Sapitam Vena Bhutale Swayam Upadamaya Vidasti Sapanantikam Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Jananda Shri Raja Radha Shri Vasudev Gaura Bhakti Vrindam Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama So, some interesting points here. First point is that when we change the desire for serving, for propensity for enjoyment, into serving the mission of the Lord, then our activities are changed into karma yoga, or the way by which one can attain spiritual perfection while engaging in the work for which he has a natural tendency. So this is the Varnashram Dharma also, based on this principle. We have a natural tendency to work. If we work in that spirit for pleasing the Lord, then that will become, gradually elevate us in karma yoga. We're giving the result to the Lord. We're not using the money for building a big house, enjoying a big television set, and trying to, you know, enjoy with women and so on. But we're using the money, living peacefully with wife or children, not extravagantly, and always, you know, keeping spiritual practice, giving money to the mission, Srila Prabhupada's mission, we can say practically. And in this way, one is performing karma yoga, working according to his natural tendency. One can work in any, from any position, he can adopt these principles of karma yoga and gradually make advancement in spiritual life. So this is the broad appeal for the mass of people. They can all engage in some kind of karma yoga. There's no reason why they can't take up the simple process. You don't have to change your position. You work according to your natural position, propensity, and then you make advancement to on the spiritual perfection. But then if you want to go further, By doing this, what will happen? We'll gradually develop into charitable devotional service. So, in the beginning, we're doing it like that, you know, like I gave the example, giving the fruit of our work to the Lord. So, that's karma yoga. But gradually, we keep doing that, then it will develop into charitable devotional service, which not only cuts off completely the root of the banyan tree, but will carry the performer to the lotus feet of the Lord. So, there is a difference then between pure bhakti yoga and karma yoga. So, we have to, you know, understand that. What is our position? If somebody is actually able to perform pure charitable devotional service, then those who are performing karma yoga, they should assist them. They should give their charity to them. Because this is their this is the higher platform. We shouldn't be envious of the principle that if somebody is fully engaged in the service, has no other interest. The karma yoga still has interest. He wants to maintain his situation. In other words, as I gave the example, he's holding proprietorship over the land. He's giving the fruit of the of what he's produced from the land to the pleasure of the Lord. The transcendentalist, he doesn't consider he has any land. Bhakti Rao says, my family, my house, my wife, myself, whatever I have, I give to you. He's given everything over to the Lord. He's no longer considering himself a proprietor and then calculating, I'll give this 50% or, like Prabhupada said, the householder should give 50% or whatever. However, between these two classes, those who are fully engaged and those who are giving the result of their work, there should be no, you can say, harsh feelings or bad feelings. The fully devoted spiritualist, he'll appreciate anybody who's doing even a little bit. Prabhupada was able to appreciate even that one drunkard man brought the roll of toilet paper to 26 Second Avenue, and he said, Prabhupada said, he's in not very good order, but he has begun his process. He's begun the process. So one who is really on the Trinitarta platform, he'll encourage everyone from whatever position they're in. We don't want artificially that someone will jump up and, you know, say, now I'm fully surrendered, I just want to... No, that we have to prepare ourselves for that. We can't, it's not something artificial. So when the devotee was like that, he was leaving, sometimes he came back and he was crying, and then he was crying, you know, sentimentally saying, Prabhupada, I want to do whatever you want. And Prabhupada looked at him very sternly, very seriously, and said, do you think you're ready for that? Obviously he wasn't ready for that. But he was out of some sentiment, he was saying he was. So we don't want that sentiment. We want to be practical. What is our position? What is our tendency? And then from there we can go forward. If we artificially jump over and think, now I can be pure devotee, I don't have to care, I can transcend my nature and so on, then we may, you know, fall down. We can easily leave and then give up the whole thing as impossible. Like this devotee that I'm speaking about, I never haven't seen him in 25 years. He was a nice devotee and everything, but he was had this sentiment, like many Polish devotees, they had this sentiment that I'm a pure devotee, everything I do is, you know. And then the other side comes, they realize they're not a pure devotee, and then they leave. Another example I had, we were first preaching in Japan, 1972, and there was one devotee with us, Ramadala. He was a temple commander, a good, hard-working boy, everything. And then we were there for a few months, and then suddenly he disappeared. We didn't know what happened. I couldn't believe it. He was like, you know, he was like one of the mainstays of the temple. There was only 4 or 5 devotees. He was like the temple commander doing all the work. But then we saw him after a few weeks, and he was, you know, and he said, well, you know, I really thought I was free from sex life. And he was a little proud, you know, the way he walked around and everything. And he said, but then I had a dream, and I saw that I wasn't free from sex life. And so I thought, well, why should I bother with this? You know, and then he went out and had sex life. I picked up some Japanese girl. And so then, you know, I saw him again 20 years later at some rapiatra in L.A. And he was still out there. And he wasn't with him. So that's not wanted either. You know, why not be honest and say, okay, yes, I do need to have sex life. I'm not able to go on in a peaceful way. My mind won't allow me. My senses are pushing me. So then become honest householder. And don't imitate, you know, one who's renounced or fully engaged in the service of the Lord. This is what he thought he was. And then when he realized he wasn't, then it became the reaction. This kind of bhogataya. We don't want that. We want to be steady. Therefore, Prabhupada even talked about Madhavisa when he fell down. And in the purport we'll read in the 8th canto about the alligator in the water. He said, all right, so you can't maintain from that position, then come to a more natural position. Like the alligator in the water has strength. That's his natural position. So from there, then you can go forward. Then you can fight. But don't give up the fight. That was the, you know, the main point that Prabhupada made. He wasn't fanatical. He saw that anybody who was doing anything, that was welcome. But he also made a distinction. If someone is able to surrender to him more fully, then he reciprocated in that way. He wasn't, you know, naive and didn't think, oh, everybody's the same. No. If somebody came forward and said, yes, I want to do whatever you say, and they were actually able to do that, and they proved consistently that they were surrendered like that, then Prabhupada would give them more mercy. He would, by force, be drawn into their lives more, because they were completely dependent on him. Just like the parents are more concerned about the 2-year-old child than they are about the 10-year-old child. Because the 2-year-old child is completely dependent on the parents. So that's also natural. And again, I always make this point that we shouldn't be envious of this principle. If somebody's getting more mercy than us, we should appreciate that. We should think, oh, this person is more advanced. They're getting the mercy because of their surrender. It's not something that the spiritual master is being favored or something like that. This is very offensive to think like that. He's equal to everyone, but if somebody surrenders to him more, then he reciprocates more. This is Krishna's also, that's his position. Okay, any questions on that? So of course the next point Prabhupada is making about the importance of the association with the devotees. We can testify that that certainly was the fact. Without Prabhupada coming here and giving us this association, none of the neophytes, as he says here, would be injected with the charitable qualities of the pure devotee. So, this is practical. Haranikashipu, even a big atheist, but he also understood this principle of association. that by associating with those who are more advanced, then we'll be inspired. So we should seek out that association and learn how to take association, not to challenge it, but to become cooperative and play. Okay, any questions?
Maharaj, sometimes if some devotee is very fired up, you know, and everything is going easy in his spiritual life, after some time, and he's thinking that I'm doing good, and everything is all right, I'm on, you know, some level.
Yeah, like this devotee I gave the example.
Yeah, but after some time, he can figure out this, or, you know, it's
yeah, yeah.
So my question is, this is like natural tendency for us to think in this way, but...
Only if we're in a mode of passion, feverish mentality. Therefore, we have to try to cultivate goodness. Then when we're in a mode of goodness, we won't think like that. We'll be more neutral. We'll be able to see ourselves for what we actually are. But if we're passionate, then we hanker for honor and prestige and so on. This is a mode of passion. But it leads to misery.
What is it? Is it pretty general tendency?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a pretty general tendency in Skom,
in the Kali Yuga that people are in a passionate ignorance?
Yeah.
Pretty general. Robert said when he came to Boston, he said, I see everybody here is influenced by the mode of passion and ignorance. So, but somehow you brought me to this place.
That's a... say about our society. I heard about this different, you know, 7 years disease, and we heard about
seven years
disease. That means that it's kind of general tendency that by 7 years in the movement, someone gets some, you know, like kind of test or lesson.
I didn't hear that. No, I don't think it's a mechanical thing like that. It depends on the receptivity of the person. If they have good, karma and good, or some devotional activities from previous life, then they may take up very quickly and become, have qualities of the devotee. It's not mechanical like that every 7 years. Then we could go to Krishna and say, okay, it's been 6 years, 364, now give me, come on. And Krishna's not like our order supplier. He's going to give us some higher taste or something because we mechanically did something. There has to be real feeling there.
No, I mean that in 7 years someone can rather, you know, become puffed up a little because, you know, first years are very into, someone is usually very enthusiastic and then...
No, that also is not, it's not mechanical. Depends what kind of association a person has. Like, if you're under a strict guru, you won't become puffed up because he'll always be watching you and chastising you with you. Like Tamakusha Maharaj, he was very strict with his disciples. I saw him. That they were serving him, Pashaha, he was, oh my gosh, he was like really demanding, you know, how they served him and everything had to be just perfect. Otherwise, he blasted him. I was like, and they liked somehow. He had a lot of disciples. They respected him. So he didn't let them get puffed up. He was always on their case. I wonder what will happen now. He's not here. But I think they're trained up by now, most of them.
All right, I have one more question. Like, someone has this, ups and downs. So he should... And, you know, he can't see this, but he's fired up, so he should doing everything in this mood, or just, you know, and thinking that this is like, you know, now I'm more inspired, so I should do everything on this level. But after some, you know, 1 month or, you know, half year, he's this down level, and he sees that, this was not actually my platform, but he is trying to do everything on this platform and he is now. But still, when coming this higher level, he should just try and maintain this low platform, or just, you know... sorry, you understand my question.
Yeah, I understand your question. No, I think we can be inspired by circumstance, like a marathon, suppose we have. But not to the point that we, you know, go down so low. We may not be able to maintain that same standard like that we have in a marathon, Prabhupada marathon. He probably didn't, you know, he wasn't against the idea that there's a Christmas marathon, people going out, working extra hard, selling his books and so on. But, I mean, everybody knew that January, the first week in January, then there would be kind of like a little bit of a letdown because you were sleeping more and so on and so on. So, but that has to be balanced. I mean, it can't be so much feverish, and then it becomes reaction to that. So, better to try to keep the pace, whatever pace you're doing. But I appreciate sometimes it's hard. So, in the beginning, so sometimes you go up and down, what to do. And then, when you come down, and you have to realize that that's okay. Whatever service I did when I was up, that's been accumulated, that's being counted. So now I shouldn't be discouraged that I'm doing a little less service at this time. I'm still doing service, I'm still trying. I mean, that the whole thing is, we have to live with our mind. We shouldn't get to the point where we can't live with ourselves. And then the mind becomes, you know, just drags us away someplace. So in other words, the intelligence has to be there, over the mind, to say, okay, then it's true, I'm not so fired up now, but let me intelligently remain, and I can expect that again the enthusiasm will come back. This is also discussed, right, in the Madhuya Kandambini. So for such neophytes, you know, that means most of us, because we're not at the point of nishtha we were discussing yesterday. So there's going to be some ups and downs. But therefore, sometimes we say, only an intelligent person can take the Krishna consciousness. Why it's more difficult for women? Because they're not so intelligent in that sense to forget about their bodily condition. Their nature has given them a body that is very demanding of them. It's pushing them stronger, even than a man, for sex life, for building a nest. And so if you just tell them, you know, just be transcendental, it's more hard for them to do it. But a man, because his intelligence is a little deeper, then he should be able to withstand those ups and downs and the pushings of the mind and the belly, so at least a little better. So we're appealing to people, intelligent people. You know. Please use your intelligence to try to understand. This is a science, right? Isn't this? These verses are just so scientific, everything laid out. Narada Muni is describing how he became perfected. It's a science. We can also become perfected by following this bhakti yoga. Now, tomorrow's verse describes that, how bhakti yoga is a science. So we're appealing to intelligent people. Why not take up this science? This will really give you satisfaction. Okay?
We were speaking that day about Narada Muni, the story that, and that he, one of his qualifications was that he was very sincere. He gave his attentive hearing, how to say, to those devotees. And my question is, so we should be very open. We should be very kind of sincere. We should be very simple. We should give our attentive hearing.
Now, this is where intelligence comes in. Intelligence, the real function of intelligence is female. Female, in the sense, it's not aggressive. It's like passive. Intelligence is just watching. So the real proper function of intelligence is to accept what is coming from the spiritual side and reject from the material side. In other words, the intelligence is not... It's receiving, like a receiver. So it's receiving the sound or the instruction, the guidance from the material side, the mind and so on, senses, and from the spiritual side, spiritual master, shastra, so on. So then, intelligence business is to discriminate. Yes, I'm going to accept the spiritual instruction, spiritual. and go in that direction. Mold my life in such a way that I make spiritual advancement. Otherwise, materialists are also very intelligent, but they're molding their life how to have sense gratification.
I understand. But my question is, what is the difference between being intelligent and being distrustful or not simple? Where is the...
Well, in the beginning, we can be doubtful. Doubtful also is a sign of intelligence. But when the doubts are presented to the spiritual master or to the mind even, then the answer is given, then we should give up that doubt. In other words, if we just keep doubts like a skeptic is one who's just, he relishes being doubtful. He doesn't, even if the proper answer is given, instead, why don't you just give up that doubt now? No, this is my doubt. I mean, they keep it. So that Prabhupada didn't like that. I remember, he would discuss with somebody and somebody would have a doubt and they'd ask a question. And then they'd go to the next question. And Prabhupada said, wait a minute, did you understand this point? Before you go to the next, what about this? So Prabhupada would take time. And then he'd make them concede, yes, okay, now I understand. Okay, when you understand that, then it should be finished. Don't bring up that doubt again, it's finished. Prabhupada finished it off. Okay, now next doubt. Okay, what is the next doubt? Then if that's explained, then you should give that up. But because we think this is my doubt, somehow we become attached because it's coming from me, we don't want to give it up, like stool. Doubts are just, the one side of the doubt is, it's intelligent. Okay, you can have a doubt. We don't say that you shouldn't inquire. Inquiry should be there. That means you have some doubt. I have a question. Why is this? But when the proper answer is given, then don't maintain that doubt. Otherwise, it becomes like a demon, the demon of doubt. Madhusudan, Arjuna is asking Krishna, please remove this doubt. You're the killer of Madhu, so you can kill this doubt I have. So Krishna does. This is the qualification of the spiritual master. He should be able to remove all the doubts in the sincere disciple. But if somebody's not sincere, then what can we do? They can go on doubting, that's because they're not sincere. They won't accept the simple thing. We have to accept. We have to agree. We have to agree to this Srimad Bhagavatam, to the principles here, devotional service. If we don't agree, what can we do? But it's laid out very scientifically. Why not agree? Then you can give up your doubts. Then your doubts will be dissipated. It's like the fog is dissipated by the sun, by the bright knowledge. If we say, Om Agyana Timirandasya, the Guru gives us the light, will dissipate our darkness, the darkness of ignorance, or the doubts. So don't be embarrassed you have a doubt. Bring them forward and bring them into the light and say, okay, this is my doubt. Then if the light shines on you, say, oh, I see, yeah, now I don't have that doubt. Then finish it. Don't again take it up 6 months later. Should be finished. Like I had so many doubts when I was coming. But the devotees were able to. Like I had one doubt. What's wrong with LSD? Why can't we use it as a sacrament? But the devotees convinced me that. That was like a material thing, artificially trying to quickly go to heaven or qualify yourself by some chemical substance. You have to qualify yourself in your heart. You have to be. So then when I heard their arguments, it took a little while, but then I was convinced, and I stopped taking them. Psychedelics. I thought it was like a sacrament. So that's just one example of one doubt that I was able to, give up. Now I have no doubt about it. I'm very convinced that LSD is not going to help you to become spiritually advanced, although it may appear to for some moment. But then the next morning, then again, you're lower than you were, and you don't know why. You may experience some high when you're taking LSD. That's okay. But then the next, you don't know how to keep that high. So it becomes frustrating. And you forget. The next morning you forget. I did experience that. And when I was there, I thought that was the real me. I could always remain that. But I can't. Now I'm back here, where I was before. So what is the use of this kind of thing? Therefore, the devotees made a pamphlet like that. Stay high forever. When you take drugs, they can say you're getting high. So they were saying, stay high forever. If you connect with Krishna, you can always be high. You don't have to have some drug. So what is your next step?
As Sri Prabhupada often warned us that we should be, you know, we shouldn't listen to Mayavadi and all this materialism.
Mayavadi.
And the materialist and we should escape them and all this, the associations.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm speaking very in general, not chikun. But anyway,
there's a reason for
it. I'm trying to understand something that happened before in my life, so that's why I'm asking, not something that regards to, that refers to this situation or whatever. Anyway, I was very kind of checking. It was years ago, but anyway. But now I can understand that actually I was, and I felt good, I felt well, I was very inspired, and I really could see some philosophical deviation that those persons that I was kind of little, at least distrustful, little, not respective. I mean, I don't know how to say better, but anyway, I didn't trust so much. But now I can say that all mentality was more like offensive. My mentality, I'm speaking about.
This is in the body, you know?
Yeah. So what's the difference of being checking, being kind of
positive? Being what?
Checking. I mean,
shaking?
Checking. I'm being...
checking?
Yeah.
Oh, checking, yeah.
Yeah. Or being, at the same time, being trustful, being, you know, in good consciousness. What's the difference?
Okay, the difference is we should present a question in a straightforward way, and if the answer is given properly, then we can check by asking question. But you know, impersonal, we may avoid the person and just keep to our own counseling. But that, you know, that's a little weakness on our side. If somebody says something we'd have a doubt about, then we should confront that, and so that we it's clear. If they're not able to answer the doubt, then we have reason to check. Then we have reason to suspect them that they're bluffing or they don't know what they're talking about. So we can be straightforward and check, that's wanted. But sometimes, because we don't like to confront, you know, in the class or individually, so we'll just hear something and then we'll keep it to ourselves, and then we'll make an opinion about this person, and we'll... But it's better to get us cleared up. The Prabhupada says in ordinary dealings we should be straightforward. That's one of the mentions in the Nectar Devotion, straightforward in ordinary dealings. So this is ordinary dealing. Somebody's speaking something, we're not clear about it, then we have a right to ask them, especially if they're speaking from the Bhagavatam or, you know, as in an official capacity as a speaker. Then we should go on questioning until it's clear in our mind, or it's clear that they're bogus. And then we should tell them, you know, you're bogus. You're not speaking the principle of Bhagavatam. You're just creating your own idea. Like I did that once. In New Vrindavan, early days, they started preaching Prabhupada is God. I said, what is this nonsense? They were sannyasis, we were brahmacharis. But we can confront them because there's no authority for what they're speaking. But that's why we say books are the basis. Shastra is the basis for Guru Sadhu. We judge the Guru Sadhu on the basis of Shastra. Therefore, Prabhupada emphasized, learn my books, read my books. Become acquainted with the subject. So we'll be able to, you know, detect who is, we'll be able to check, like you say, who is bona fide, who is not bona fide. It's only, you know, on the authority. What they're speaking should be backed up by authority. Not that they make some bluff. You know what a bluff is?
Okay.
Bluff is like if you play cards in poker, there's a game, poker. Then you don't have a good hand, but you bet like you tell. So you're making people think something that's not, hoping that they'll okay, I fold, and then you win the pot. It's called a bluff. You don't have it, but you pretend like you do have it. So they don't have the knowledge, but they pretend like they do. Therefore, the Shastra, we have to come to the books. Where does it say that in Prabhupada's books? Like now, Chiparari is saying that we can give women sannyas, something like that. There's clearly a Prabhupada in many places, he says no. So then they say, well, we don't care for Prabhupada's authority. You know, we are our own authority. Okay, then we don't care for you. That's all right. You can think whatever, you can do whatever you want. But don't come into our association. Don't come into our websites, which, of course, they're letting them do, because they're stupid. We're stupid women are running the chakra. And VNN and all these. There's no, they're not orthodox. They're not authority. They're not really authority on these websites. And so they let all these nonsense ideas there. As an idea like, that's the democratic idea. Oh, you put your idea, you put your idea, we'll argue back and then we'll get a better idea. That's not the way it works. The idea is already there. The nature of women is already established. It doesn't change in the Kali Yuga. If it just, if anything, it becomes worse. If you give them a sannyas, then it just creates a disturbance in society.
Yes, but the thing is that, you know, they're devotees, but they may, you know, preach or do something wrong.
Yes.
So how to, I mean, it might be even completely opposite to, you know, to our siddhanta or whatever. So how to be rightly situated in consciousness, how to not come to hate them and at the same time...
We don't hate them.
Yeah.
But we shouldn't become influenced by them.
I mean,
we can respect them from a distance. They're their devotees, okay? We can offer respects, but we don't have to hear from them. When we know that they're creating their own idea, just like this Rasananda, I had one disciple who went to Tripurari without telling me, I wouldn't have given him permission. Now he's putting something on the website, or he says he wants to put some interview and so on. So I told him, no, you shouldn't do that. You shouldn't associate with him or his followers. But let's see if he accepts that or not. Otherwise, he may end up being Tripurari's disciple. Because it's all voluntary. I mean, I can't force him. Or he may be his own disciple. He may end up, you know, taking a little bit from Tripurari, a little bit from here, and then be his own guru. That's also a tendency. So, that's the nature of spiritual life. There's always going to be different ideas. So that's why we are stressing that Prabhupada is not an ordinary person, that his books are the books of law books for the next 10,000 years, that we want to base our ISKCON society on the authority of mainly of Prabhupada's books.
I remember also that Govind Maharaj, he said in his...
Who?
Govind Swami. He said in his Paritashma, his book that Vaishnav means simplicity, and simplicity means Vaishnav.
Vaishnav means?
Simplicity.
Simplicity.
And simplicity means Vaishnav. He said all scriptures, they say like this, like that.
Kutinati means one who is not simple, tricky, or duplicit.
And Shripada also says that Krishna consciousness is simply for the simple.
Yeah. So I heard Prabhupada personally say, the children of my God brothers, they're all tricky. They weren't simple. They were calculating, oh, this Swamiji is bringing so many white people. I'll, you know, get something from him. Instead of coming with a simple, you know, straightforward way and saying, appreciate this work you're doing, something I can help. No, they were coming, presenting one thing, like bluffing. But really, they had a different motive.
Yeah.
Prabhupada was very simple. He was.
He would also kind of explained it more. He said that someone is simple, like he's very open. You know, Krishna will send him, Krishna will arrange his association very, you know, consisting of very good devotees.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have to be, how to say, you know, like checking or differentiating, you know, I mean. And to the opposite, he said that if someone is tricky, is not simple, Krishna will send him, you know, different sensation.
That's right. Therefore, this Tripurari, that's the article I was going to show you, that Sudhir Maharaj, his Tripurari is associated with this Hirani Garba, who is an atheist, and he helped him write Prabhupada, his Bhagavad Gita, because he's a very learned scholar. He was Prabhupada's disciple at one time. He rejected Prabhupada, he rejected the whole Bhakti Siddhanta. But he became like a scholar, and he knows so many things. He's a really intelligent guy. And Tripurari is associating with him to write his Bhagavad Gita. So just like you said, because Tripurari is tricky, he's associating with this other guy, who's also tricky. And there's a very good article exposing that. I can give you, I have the website. It's a little intellectual, I don't know if you grasp it. Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki.
Jayo.